From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C.
The nation's capital hosted the largest climate rally in our nation's history. Crowds demanded that President Obama take immediate action to address man-made global climate change.
In the nation's capital and across the country last weekend, massive rallies demonstrated a rising public awareness of both the urgency of addressing the issue of climate change and the role of many diverse groups in calling for action. Among the faith-based coalitions joining in Sunday's Forward on Climate events were Interfaith Power and Light, Young Evangelicals for Climate Action, and a number of denominational groups. Another coalition taking part was Green Faith. And on this week's show, you'll meet that group's Green Faith's executive director, the Reverend Fletcher Harper.
Scouts of America expected to vote tomorrow on whether to lift the ban on gay members.
It's ironic President Obama talks about what a great organization they are, but part of what makes them such a great organization is timeless moral principles.
A half-page ad in USA Today asking the Boy Scouts to keep their ban on gay members.
Well, I'm sure you've heard about it. Several weeks ago, the Boy Scouts of America's executive board made headlines with the announcement that it was considering changing the anti-gay policies of the nation's largest youth organization. But since then, a decision on the issue has been delayed until a national annual meeting in May. We'll look at the anachronistic positions the Boy Scouts holds on gay scouts and leaders, on atheists and agnostics, and on some of the ways your tax dollars help prop up these positions. Jason Torpy will join me later on this week's show to enlighten us on this issue. But first,
well, houses of worship normally don't get money from the federal government to rebuild after disasters, but that could change.
Well, the House of Representatives voted to allow federal assistance for religious sites damaged by Sandy.
There's a complicated issue wending its way through the legislative process here in Washington. This past week, the House of Representatives voted 354-72 in support of providing federal disaster aid for houses of worship that were damaged by Superstorm Sandy. Supporters of the bill have spoken movingly about the role these churches, mosques, and synagogues play in these devastated communities hit by the hurricane. So why on earth do Interfaith Alliance and other church-state separation advocates strongly oppose this seemingly kind-hearted effort? We need to give you an explanation about that. And here to help explain what's really at stake here is Ariel Gingold, who serves as Deputy Director for Public Policy at Interfaith Alliance. She's been on the show before. Ariel, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thank you for having me, Welton.
Well, let's start by summarizing the action that Congress took this past week.
Sure. So in short, the House, as you said, passed a bill that changes existing FEMA policy of not granting direct grants to rebuild their facilities to houses of worship, changed that policy to explicitly state that houses of worship are eligible. The current category of organizations, nonprofit organizations that are eligible for these direct grants are those that provide essential services of a government nature. And so the bill basically says that houses of worship provide those essential services and would be eligible for those grants.
Yeah. Ariel, this same issue came up after Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita along the Gulf Coast region. The same arguments were made. What happened in that situation? Did Did Congress change anything in those instances?
So after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, Congress did not act to change policies. There were discussions at the administration level, and Bush administration officials said flat out that houses of worship were not and should be eligible. Mm-hmm. I believe that some still got money, but I think it was limited to their social service organizations, yeah. to their soup kitchens, their homeless shelters, et cetera. The other important thing to note here is that houses of worship are already eligible for Small Business Administration loans, and those loans are up to $2 million. So, of course, a loan and a grant are different mm-hmm. in nature, but they are already eligible for some assistance.
This sounds good. It sounds kind. It mm-hmm. sounds compassionate.
Though the funding might help them rebuild, it will also set them up in a bad position in terms of their religious freedom, their autonomy, the ability of clergy to be a prophetic voice, to speak mm-hmm. truth to power. It gets harder to speak truth to power when you're also indebted to that power financially. And it would, in the end, be the wrong thing for these houses of worship. So this is an issue not just of the government not establishing religion mm-hmm. in this way. It seems a pretty basic violation of the religion clauses of the First Amendment to right. have Congress, to have the government building houses of worship. Mm-hmm. But it's also for the interests of the religious institutions.
The rationale that supporters of federal aid to storm-damaged houses of worship revolve around the civil purposes some of those facilities are used for. Talk a minute about the fact that in most cases, existing policies already allow disaster aid for these kinds of facilities, because I think that's been muddled in the debate, and I think you've already alluded to it to some extent.
Many houses of worship who have social services, soup kitchens, homeless shelters, things of that nature, are already eligible for disaster relief aid for those facilities. Currently, if houses of worship provide these essential government-like services and the facilities in which they provide them, more than 50% of that space is used more than 50% of the time mm-hmm. to provide that service, then they are eligible for the aid. So this would be taking a section of a house of worship or the soup kitchen that's run in the separate building and saying not only are those eligible, which they are already, but mm-hmm. the entire house of worship up to the cross on the top of the building, the stained glass windows, possibly even the prayer books in the houses of worship. Now those are eligible as well, writ large, which puts FEMA in the position of saying what they will or will not cover, what is or is not religious, etc. And it's also inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent, two cases in particular, that say that not only can you not build and rebuild spaces that are used for religious functions, mm-hmm. even within larger facilities like religious schools or universities. The government can't build chapels, for example. You can't refurbish them because who knows whether the facility used today is more than not for a secular purpose. Who knows in the future if the rec room of the House of Worship will be as well.
Put it right down on street level. Does this mean that the people who listen to State of Belief, who really don't identify with any religion, even an atheist listener, they're going to have to fund a program with their tax dollars that may involve the government building steeples on churches, putting bemas in synagogues, putting prayer rugs on the floor in mosques, and maybe even funding stained glass windows. Is that what that means?
That is a definite possibility. That is how this could play out. And beyond that, even people of faith, I, as a Reformed Jew, my tax dollars shouldn't support other religions, houses of worship, even other Jewish sanctuaries. I get to decide which houses of worship I support and how I support them. And that's not what our tax dollars should be spent on.
So why can the people in Congress not understand that?
They're in a tricky situation, I think, in many ways, because so many of their constituents are affected. And this is an issue that is really hitting even the strictest separationists in Congress in a difficult way, because it's a it's a matter of competing principles, caring for the people in their district as well as standing by these principles. Many members of Congress do get that. 72 no votes is significant, especially considering we had 3 days to turn this around between when the bill was introduced and when it was voted on. It didn't get a hearing. This was pretty fast-tracked. So luckily there are members of Congress who get this, but I think part of the problem is that those on the other side, advocates on the other side who are supporting this policy shift, are billing it as an issue of religious discrimination, as an issue of houses of worship and people of faith are being discriminated against by not being eligible for this funding. And that just isn't the case. Right. As I mentioned, there are a whole category of nonprofit organizations that are not eligible for this money. On top of that, what we're talking about here is saying that houses of worship and the services they provide are essential services that are government-like. There are many people, myself included, who would say that what houses of worship do is essential for many communities, for many people. But to say that anything that a house of worship does is government-like is a problem both legally, I think, and philosophically, because even though a house of worship may provide a shelter for people, may provide food, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any that say, any clergy, any people of faith that say they do it to be like government. They do it out of their theological beliefs. They do it out of their religious mission. Exactly. So we have some legal problems here, but we also have philosophical, religious problems here with the implications for houses of worship for saying that what they're doing is like government.
It passed the House. What's the chance in the Senate?
The future in the Senate seems a bit unclear. There has not been a bill introduced yet. We're figuring out what the timing would be. Mostly the path forward seems unclear. The rules in the Senate are different. Vote processes are different. So we're talking to allies in the Senate. We're trying to get a sense of what the future would be. But hopefully this will not move forward.
So if it didn't move forward, it would just die?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Unless there's some sort of action from the administration or unless FEMA changes their policy, which all indications have been that FEMA, who would have to administer these policy changes, are not eager to make these changes and do understand the implications for any kind of policy shift in this way.
Tell us about what you as a policy person at the Interfaith Alliance is doing to bring an understanding of the risk of the case for federal funding to houses of worship.
Great. So we met extensively and spoke over the phone with members of Congress's staff about the implications for religious freedom. And we're really trying to focus in these conversations with the House, with Senate, on the harm to religion. We've also had many, many members of Interfaith Alliance, hundreds and hundreds of members, write to their elected officials, also conveying this message. We sent a letter to the whole House last week. We're prepared to send one up to the Senate when the time comes. And we're really trying to get folks in the Northeast who are affected by the impact of Superstorm Sandy to weigh in as well. Some have already done so. Reverend Mark Lukens, a clergy member in New York who also is a leader of an Interfaith Alliance affiliate up there, spoke very eloquently in NPR about the harm to him as a clergy member and to his church by taking any federal aid. So we're trying to really spread that message.
Ariel Gingold is Deputy Director for Public Policy at Interfaith Alliance. And I want to thank her for briefing us today on State of Belief Radio. I also want to encourage you, if you want to know more about this issue and what's being done on it, to write to Ariel at Interfaith Alliance.
You could reach me by emailing me at policy@interfaithalliance.org. And I do hope, especially if you're in the Northeast, we'd love to hear from you on this issue. So thank you for having me.
We've got to take a quick break, but coming right up, Interfaith Climate Action with Green Faith Executive Director, the Reverend Fletcher Harper. Later on this week's show, Jason Torpy on the Boy Scouts of America's exclusionary policies. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. A big, big event in Washington, D.C. last weekend. Tens of thousands of Americans rallied at the Washington Monument and at other locations across the country, calling for action on global climate change. A broad coalition of groups was represented, and one of those groups is a coalition in its own right representing Interfaith Partners for the Environment. Green Faith, and the Reverend Fletcher Harper leads that group, and I want to welcome Reverend Fletcher Harper to State of Belief Radio.
Great to be here.
I would imagine that you must be feeling pretty good about what happened across the nation last weekend.
I think that what's most important is, at this stage, there's a clear growing consensus and concern across Americans of different political, cultural, and religious persuasions that we've really got to respond to climate change, that it poses a very real threat to human well-being, to the well-being of the environment, and that we're on a really dangerous course. So I'm glad that that awareness is growing, but we've got an awfully long way to go to get where we need to be.
Fletcher, how did Green Faith get started? And tell us a little bit about what kind of work you're doing.
We're one of the oldest interfaith environmental organizations in the country. We were founded back in 1992 by Jewish and Christian leaders in New Jersey who felt that there needed to be a response to environmental concerns from a religious perspective. They were motivated at least in part by taking part in the UN summit in Rio de Janeiro, which was a sort of coming out in many ways for a number of the world's major religious leaders who made statements about the importance of environmental sustainability at that point. And they got us started first in New Jersey, but over the last decade, we've worked nationally. We offer a range of programs, all organized around the central theme of encouraging and equipping and empowering diverse faith communities to be environmental leaders. And all of the work that we do is organized around our three core values of spirit, stewardship, and justice in relationship to the environment.
Mm. The religious community in this nation, has it been more of a problem or more of a source of promise in dealing with climate change?
I would say it's been both. Within the more liberal branches of established religious communities, there's been a recognition for well over 15 years that climate change represents a major moral issue that needs to get addressed to avoid real serious harm to people, particularly the poor, and to the planet. Broadly speaking, in more culturally and religiously conservative portions of different religious traditions, there's been resistance to that, in significant part because over the last 30 years, caring for the creation has become identified in many people's minds as a politically liberal cause. That's changing, though, in many ways.
We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Reverend Harper in just a moment. Coming up later in the show, challenging government funding for the Boy Scouts of America with Jason Torpy. And just a reminder that there will be more of this conversation, and there will be more of the conversation with other guests today posted on the website of this show. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. We'll be right back. This free State of Belief Radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Welcome back, everyone, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. My guest is the Reverend Fletcher Harper. Reverend Harper's executive director of Green Faith, one of the many and diverse groups that took part in last weekend's rallies for action on climate change. I'm interested in how diverse a coalition you're seeing on these issues in terms of faith-driven activism. It looked like during the rallies that there was a pretty major Catholic involvement. Are you finding that this is an issue around which people from very diverse religions can come together comfortably?
Yes, it's been a really welcome development. And I think that one of the reasons that diverse religious groups are able to come together is because they don't have too much history around environmental concerns. Therefore, mm-hmm. they don't have too much baggage around right. it, which is a welcome change in certain cases. But we've seen growing numbers of groups from all different areas of the religious community, the broad religious community mm-hmm. in this country, start to reach out. One example is we see a growing number of Latino and Latina Christians interested in these issues, in part because they see their families and their loved ones who may still live in parts of Latin America, which are getting affected dramatically by mm-hmm. by climate change, agricultural cycles getting disrupted, mm-hmm. flooding problems. We've seen growing numbers of Hindu leaders and representatives begin to become involved, again, in part because they see communities in India getting devastated and impacted substantially, in part because that community, the Hindu community within the U.S., is in a sense starting to come of age here in this country and mm-hmm. realizing that they have a need and both an opportunity and a responsibility to be active civic partners in terms of working for a better world. Yeah. You know, we see a growing number of evangelicals, particularly younger evangelicals yeah. who care about these issues. And that's in no small part thanks to the really good work over the past decade of groups like the Evangelical Environmental Network and right. Restoring Eden and other evangelical groups that have been working on this for many years now. And I think that's going to continue because the issue is so clearly a moral one.
Yeah.
People from all different religious, ethnic, socioeconomic, cultural backgrounds have, the research shows, profound spiritual experiences outdoors. Mm-hmm. One of the major ways in which people experience the revelation of the world of the spirit or of the divine, if you will, is through profound experiences of awe and wonder and mystery and gratitude outdoors. Mm-hmm. There's also a recognition of promise in relationship to the opportunity for faith groups to reduce their operating expenses substantially through energy conservation and efficiency. We've worked with hundreds of faith groups that have reduced operating expenses substantially while also reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. And Green Faith is doing a lot of work in that area. We're just launching this winter our Energy Shield program, modeled after the Scouting Merit Badge program, where a house of worship or a faith-based institution can organize an energy weekend, and we provide all the resources to make that successful, and they save energy at their house of worship or faith-based school or agency, and then they get their members or students or stakeholders to do the same at home. So that's one level. Another level where we think action is going to get ramped up is in the whole area of fossil fuel divestment, growing out of efforts that have started on campuses around the country. Green Faith is organizing a national effort to identify religious leaders who would like to start to encourage their denominations, their congregations, if they have endowments, to look seriously at the moral responsibility to consider divesting from fossil fuel holdings. The reason being that the damage that these companies are causing is undeniable. And unfortunately, to date, these companies have really resisted any serious effort to respond to the climate crisis at a level commensurate with the challenge that the scientific community has made clear.
Fletcher, the one thing that I don't want to leave without doing is telling our listeners how they can get more information on Green Faith.
The best place to go is www.greenfaith.org. We're on Facebook. Those are the good places to go to find out more.
The Reverend Fletcher Harper is Executive Director of Green Faith, representing Interfaith Partners for the Environment. Reverend Harper, this has been most illuminating. Thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you for your work, and it's been a pleasure.
We've got to take one more break here, but up next, Jason Torkey. He's written about the government funding the Boy Scouts of America. They've been receiving money that we offered as tax money. And he's got a problem with that. And you know what? I do too. Details coming right up. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. As we watch the Boy Scouts of America leadership take one step forward, then one, maybe two steps back on finally allowing openly gay leaders and members, a compelling article appeared on the website of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. The author of that article is Army Captain Jason Torpy, who serves as a board member for MAAF. I'm very pleased to be able to welcome Jason now to State of Belief Radio. Captain Torpy, welcome.
Thank you very much.
The piece that you have written, Jason, focuses on the outdated values of the largest private youth organization in America, the Boy Scouts. And I wonder if you would just begin by identifying those outdated values for all of us.
Well, the main issues for the outdated values that people are aware of is discrimination against gays and atheists. So it is official policy of the Boy Scouts of America nationally that anyone who does not profess a belief in a higher power cannot be a good person. Anyone who feels attraction to someone of the same sex or, you know, more specifically, does not conform to traditional gender roles and, you know, sexual orientation cannot be a good person, right? So the Boy Scouts of America is generally thought to be and endorsed by the President of the United States as a proper organization that provides good values for our youth. And then, in turn, what they respond with is hatred for gays and atheists and, you know, again, people who are not gender conformed.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the outdated values that need to be pushed aside by the Boy Scouts of America, or at the very least, the government needs to stop endorsing those values.
Talk about the relationship between that government funding and, God forbid, if they keep the policies as they've been.
With the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, we interact primarily with the government. And one of the common things that we, you know, try to emphasize is it's not about religion, right? And it's not mm-hmm. necessarily about the Boy Scouts in this particular case. What we have is a situation where the United States government provides very specific endorsement and support and resources and privileges to a private organization. Now, that's not necessarily an issue unless that support becomes support for discrimination, things that are against American values, official American values. If I rise to the rank of Eagle Scout within the Boy Scouts, their highest rank, then I am afforded a promotion upon entering the United States military. One rank in several other services, two ranks in the Navy and the Coast Guard. So that is discrimination in hiring by the government, because as a gay person or, you know, somebody who's transgendered or an atheist, I don't have access
to reach that rank. There are specific regulations both overseas and in the United States that afford building and personnel and logistics support for Boy Scout activities and Boy Scout troops. So if I'm a Boy Scout troop leader and I want to operate on a military installation, there are government regulations that allow me a building to use. So those are specific areas. And then obviously the president endorsement is more informal, but that is a very, you know, I'd like to have that endorsement, right? But I don't. Boy Scouts has the endorsement. An organization that specifically discriminates against our organization, our members, has the endorsement of the President of the United States. The Boy Scouts is a private organization. If they wish to be private, they can discriminate if they like. Mm-hmm. I don't approve, but that's my opinion. But the government cannot discriminate.
One listener to this show, who happens to be the host, feels very uninformed because I actually didn't know that kind of entanglement existed. And for sure, our government was formed to not deal with that kind of discrimination unless it's putting it down. I may be entering Chuck Hagel territory here, but I suppose it's accurate to say that at this moment in our history, the LGBT lobby is better organized than the atheist lobby. Do you think that's the prime reason for the focus being on gay scouts, or do you think atheism actually is scarier for some people than the other kind of prejudice?
Well, you heard it here first. Don't tell the religious people, but you can't get converted to gay, right? You can't get converted to be a lesbian. Like, they don't believe that, but I think they're figuring it out. But you can't get converted to atheist, right? We're not necessarily out there trying to do it. Certainly within math, that is outside the scope of our organization. But once they figure out you can get converted to atheist but not gay, then they'll fear us. But I really hope the listeners, as support and acceptance is given to, you know, our gay and lesbian youth, mm-hmm. don't forget about the atheists, right? When the Boy Scouts accept gay scouts, if they choose to do so, please don't give them a pass, mm-hmm. right? Please don't give them a pass for discriminating against right. atheists, because, you know, I really fear that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, and I respect the issues that the LGBT community deals with even today, and certainly in the past, GLBT youth are driven to suicide. They're drugged through the streets and beaten. So as much as I want to say we in the atheist community have it rough, that, you know, they have it worse, right? So it may be the case that people have more concern and more care for the LGBT community and the African-American community, for example, because they have it worse than us. But we are still a discriminated minority. We don't deserve the discrimination that we have, but I think they're further along because people recognize that, you know, they've had a terrible, terrible lot mm-hmm. in life, the LGBT community has. And, you know, after a while, people will get around to helping us as well and including us as well, hopefully sooner rather than later. But I'm more than happy to see the LGBT community get help, even if it's before us.
I know the Girl Scouts have been okay with gay members for over a decade now. I do not know where that organization stands on issues of atheism and free thought. I'm assuming you may know that, and I wish you would tell us.
You know, people are kind of aware of one organization for scouting, the Boy Scouts of America in the United States, and kind of the Girl Scouts on the side. You should understand that internationally, it's not the case. There are often multiple scouting organizations. This is not a monolith. It just seems that way in the United States. So internationally, there's broad acceptance for gay and lesbian youth. There are often several scouting organizations. They work together. So we have a unique problem here in the United States. So the international community is a source for support, and I think the Girl Scouts are. You know, my experience from what I've heard is they've been nothing but accepting for LGBT youth and for atheist youth. So I think the Girl Scouts are a unique thing.
I want our listeners to know more about the work of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. So give us a little bit on that, and I wish you would talk specifically about the atheists in the foxholes and the work you do around that.
Well, for the atheists in foxholes specifically, this is a term everybody is familiar with. It's tossed around like some other mm-hmm. prior discriminatory terms were, hey, we can say there's no atheists in foxholes because, you know, what's the big deal? Let's just step on them. But I served in Iraq. I have an organization that's full of people that have served in war to defend the United States of America, to risk their lives. So every time that your listeners hear that there's no atheists in foxholes,
please correct the person you're talking to, just any other discriminatory term, because it's unacceptable. Right. It also really puts down faith, because it says that if you're scared, then that's good enough. You know, faith isn't about love, it's about fear. And so I think it's discriminatory on both sides. So what our organization does is basically everything that a chaplain does for a Christian or a Jew or a Hindu, we try to inspire them to do that, to connect our people with our community, but most of the time they don't. So we're having to basically do the chaplain's job for them, to reach out to service members that are in need, that have a stressful time, they're detached from their home community, they're trying to grow their values and their character. And we're reaching out to connect them with the civilian community, with resources to read, to study, other people like them, to try to build a community of atheists, humanists, free thinkers, and other non-believers in the military, because right now the military is just not doing it for them.
Yeah. For the listener that's saying, I want to get in touch with them and find out more about them, how do they do that?
MilitaryAtheist.org is the website. You can go on there and find all the information you need. We're based in D.C., but we're national, so one of the things that you can click on is get involved locally, and you'll find military installations and ships all over the world, especially if you're military to plug into, or if it's your local military community. You can find ways as a student or as a civilian to reach out and send care packages and communicate and support meetings and facilitate what's going on, or to donate to what we're doing.
I've been speaking with Army Captain Jason Torpy, a board member with Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. Jason's commentary on military funding of the Boy Scouts of America appears on the website militaryatheists.org. Thank you for your service, and thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio and enlightening, I think, a lot of us.
Thanks for being good religious people.
Before we go, we received a listener email this past week reacting strongly to my interview with David Blankenhorn, among other issues. I want to take just a couple of minutes to address that critical email right here. Your interview was very dishonest, the listener wrote. She charged us with male chauvinism for failing to confront Blankenhorn on his past writings promoting what the listener called patriarchal values. Here's where I think many of us can shoot ourselves in the foot if we're not careful. It's never been the policy of this show to vet guests based on their lifetime positions or statements. Change is a process, and I feel it's profoundly counterproductive to condemn an ally for not having changed enough, especially when the process of change, as David Blankenhorn so poignantly described it, comes with so much built-in opposition and risk. If we wait until we agree on everything, we will never agree on anything. And confronting this guest over gender roles seemed rather beside the point while discussing same-gender families. Now, here's the interesting thing. After that interview, I actually received a note in which another woman wrote, "The interview with David Blankenhorn renewed my faith in the possibility of people changing their minds." In an age of what seems to be permanently intractable and entrenched partisanship, it was so refreshing to have a public figure so honestly share the truth of his process of change. And my goodness, he changed a lot. Our alliances and coalitions are in desperate need of that kind of honesty, which always starts with being brave enough to be honest with oneself. Let's be patient with each other. Let's encourage our moving toward one another and avoid reducing our alliances to an all-or-nothing litmus test mentality. Because, folks, the stakes are way too high for us to be doing anything less. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Please visit us online at stateofbelief.com to find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, read transcripts, sign up for our podcasts. You can learn about the new State of Belief app for iPhone and Android devices. Share your thoughts on what you've heard with your social media instruments of Facebook and Twitter. Contact information is available if you need it at stateofbelief.com, including the toll-free listener line, 800-856-0277. And of course, as always, we encourage you to tell others about this show and encourage them to listen. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.